Church.
This is Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge,
your hometown voice.
And now your host, the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith.
And I am the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith. And this is Rogue Talk for June 30th, 2017. Welcome to the show. Got another great show for you today. And before we get to the heart of it here, I got some local stuff we want to get to. But on today's show, we're going to talk a little bit about the minimum wage. Of course, tomorrow will be the second in minimum wage increases here in Oregon, a law that was passed a year ago or started taking effect a year ago with a minimum wage increase. Takes another step tomorrow with the second increase. It'll be a six-year plan, and we'll kind of get into what that means, and you know, I'll give you my opinions on what I think about the minimum wage, and also we'll talk about how they've implemented this plan and you know, what that means for their thinking on this. So we'll dive into that a little bit later here, but first I wanted to get into some things happening locally. Of course, last weekend we had a replay on the show to get you ready for Rooster Crow. I had Brian and Ryan in here talking about Rooster Crow. Of course, Ryan Hess is going to be the incoming president of the chamber, and Brian Dorsey is the current president of the chamber. And we, in that interview, we of course talked about all things Rooster Crow and Rooster Crow Car Show. And of course, that happened this last weekend, and it wouldn't be Rooster Crow if the forecast all week was anything but for hot weather. We've gotten used to that Rooster Crow weekend, you know, always plenty warm, and this year was no exception. They were forecasting 108 and 110 degree, depending on who you were talking to, and we came pretty close to that. So it was hot. We did get a little cool off at the later in the day on Sunday with the thunderstorms rolling through. And fortunately for the car show, which happens on Sunday, we started wrapping up a little earlier. We had intended on finishing at 2, which was an hour earlier than in previous years when we would get done at 3 o'clock. And we actually were wrapped up by 1:30 this Sunday, and that turned out to be pretty good timing, because by the time 3 o'clock rolled around, the thunderstorms were getting, you know, pretty intense coming through. And we didn't get the worst of it here in Rogue River, but we got enough. And some of the areas in and around Rogue River got hit even harder than we did. I know there was even some lightning strikes out in Weimar that started a couple of fires, but none of that turned into anything too serious. But getting back to the Rooster Crow festivities, the parade seemed to be pretty much what we're used to for the Rooster Crow parade. The Corvette Club had one of the larger showings. They had quite a few cars out there. I think the total count we got was 22, which is a pretty good showing for the Corvette Club. But I think the attendance was probably down a little bit. At least it felt that way walking around. And, of course, we covered the parade right here on 94.3 The Bridge. Pastor Gigline and I were there on the up on the trailer. Of course, the judges don't sit up on the trailer anymore, because for the first time this year, they did the judging before the parade started. And we had actually hoped to have a lot of those results for you while we were, you know, doing the live coverage of the parade. And we did get some of those, didn't get them all to us. So a few kinks to work out in that. But I think all in all, doing the judging ahead of time, once they kind of iron out the kinks, will be, you know, a really good time. And so while I'm talking about Rooster Crow, I want to go ahead and give you the phone number. If you've got some something you want to talk about related to Rooster Crow, or if you want to call in to talk about the minimum wage and your feelings on that. Maybe you have a business and it's going to affect your business. I'd love to hear from you. That number is 541-299-0498. Once again, 541-299-0498. And anybody calls in today, I do have a small gift for you from Rogue Express, so I'd love to hear from you. Now, getting back to the Rooster Crow, some of the parade winners for this year. Of course, this year's theme was the Redneck Rooster Crow, and we had a good time with that at the car show. Every time we made announcements and had to mention the Rooster Crow car show as we were making the announcement, we were kind of dressing up the redneck part of that, having a good time. And a lot of the entries had the redneck theme, and so the theme winner this year was the River Bells Red Hat Society or Red Hat Club. Some of the other winners, the junior riders went to Tarasco's Mexican Restaurant. Rogue Valley Community Church got the non-commercial float award. The commercial float award also went to Tarasco's Mexican Restaurant. The marching unit award went to Expressive Modern Dance. The youth entry award went to the Rogue River Martial Arts, and we had a good time with that during the broadcast. I remember, I think I said something stupid about Chuck Norris. So, well, they were doing, I guess, what they called Chuck Norris style in their presentation that they were doing in the parade. So we had a good time with that. The adult entry award went to the Bahari Court Ladies Oriental Shrine, and I won't even begin to try and explain what that is. The tractor award went to Rusty Relics. The individual antique auto award went to Carol and Ann Teeters with their 65 Mustang convertible, and the Antique Auto Group Award went to the Southern Oregon Corvette, so the Corvette Club. And finally, the judge's choice was also for the River Bells Red Hat Club. So congratulations to all of those winners. And then the main event of the day on Saturday, of course, the Rooster Crow competition, due to the high heat this weekend and kind of a lower attendance, we only had 6 roosters made the trip out to the Crow, but the winner did a pretty respectable job for such a hot day. Carson, who is a Bard Rock rooster owned by Junior Carter of White City, Carson won the Rooster Crow with 45 crows, which is, you know, not going to break any records, but for as hot and humid as it was on Saturday, that was actually a pretty good showing. So congratulations to Carson and his owner, Junior Carter. And the human rooster crowing champion this year was Kara Ayers, and she beat out 2 out of the 3 previous winners among a lot of other participants to win that. And she was all dressed up and everything, and apparently she does some entertaining as part of the rest of her life, so this was maybe a little bit of old hat for her to dress up and belt it out, but apparently she really wowed the judges this year. So congratulations to Kara. And then over to the Rooster Crow Run. That took place Saturday morning before the parade. The men's and women's winners were both from Medford. The men's winner was Justin Rosas. And Justin, I believe he is one of the folks that runs the Southern Oregon Runners Club. And he won the event. And Janelle Ralph was the female winner. She finished 3rd overall, and finishing 2nd overall, right between Justin and Janelle, was our own Rogue Talk mascot, Cameron Smith. So he got 2nd overall in the on the men's side of the race. And so congratulations to the Rogue Talk mascot. And he's not going to be with us today, but I'm hoping because it's summertime, we'll be bringing Cameron in a little bit more throughout the summer, getting, especially as it gets closer to college football season. We've started a tradition of picking the college football games with Cameron. So we hope to get him back on the show fairly soon. So that was it for Saturday at the Rooster Crow. And then, of course, Sunday was the car show. And I was busy again Sunday as I was the MC for the car show. And we had a really, really great time out there. And as I mentioned, we cut it off a little earlier than usual, which may end up being kind of the way we do it for now on, especially when it's that hot. The car owners start getting a little bit antsy. They've been out there all day long, and they want to find out who they won. We did a couple things different this year at the car show that I think were pretty well received. As the sponsor trophies were decided upon, they were given out right on the spot. So those trophies or the plaques this year were presented, and they were put out right in front of the car so that the people that were coming through later in the day, they all got to see who won all of those awards. We also had, of course, the final awards were given out right around 1:30, and everyone seemed to have a really good time. We had a ton of freebies we gave away. We raffled off a ton of items, and it was just a fun day. The breeze was blowing, which was keeping it a little bit cooler, and of course that was leading up to blowing in all the thunderstorms. So it all turned out really well. We had a really good time, and if I didn't see you out there, we'll love to see you again next year. I did my first Facebook Live video. It was the worst video you'll want to see. It was really shaky. I've never done it before, and I wasn't really paying much attention to my phone as I was taking it. There was a lot of people out there, and they were still setting up cars, and so I was more concerned with not running into somebody than I was with the quality of the video. And so next Facebook Live we do, we'll try and clean up the video a little bit. But I wanted to thank everyone that shared the video or watched the video. We got 5 new likes on the Rogue Talk Facebook page. So if you haven't done that yet, go onto Facebook and search Rogue Talk and give us a like there on Facebook and follow along with what's going on with Rogue Talk. I try and promote the shows that are coming up and promote shows that are available on the website. And anytime there's community things that I can share on there, I try and do that too. Again, I wanted to thank everybody for watching that video. I've never done one before, and between all the shares and people watching it, we had over 1,300 views, which, you know, isn't exactly viral, but it got that particular post got the most attention that I think I've ever had on one of my posts on Rogue Talk. So I'm super excited about, and we got several new likes this weekend on the page. So super excited about that, and I'm loving that more and more people are finding out about the show. It's gonna help me make the show better, and it'll get me more ideas for guests that I can have on the show and things that we can talk about. So that pretty much wraps it up for Rooster Crow. So we're going to take a little bit of a break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the minimum wage. Don't go away.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
We are live outside the home of Joe and Rosie Goddard, where a pretty big tickle fight broke out just minutes ago. Sources say their father instigated the laughter. Let's go inside for a comment. Apparently, they have no comment. Dads, let this be a reminder that it only takes a moment to make a moment. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Talking about things that matter. 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice.
With SRN Sports, I'm Michael Harrington. Let's start with your Major League Baseball action yesterday in the American League. It was Houston beating Oakland 6-1. The Astros, the hottest team in baseball right now. Shortstop Carlos Correa says consistency has been the key to the Major League best record, 54-26.
It's a little adversity here and there, but we've been able to overcome all that and be able to keep playing good baseball and be able to stay on top of our division. So, you know, that's what we want to do. We want to keep building a league and eventually win the division.
Elsewhere, Cleveland beat Texas 5-1. It was the Tigers 7 and Kansas City 3. Orioles over Toronto 2-0. Boston 6 and Minnesota 3. The White Sox beat the Yankees 2-4-3. In the National League yesterday, Cardinals 10, Arizona 4. The Cubs over the Nats 5-4. Brewers 11, Reds 3. The Mets beat Miami 6-3. It was San Diego 6 and Atlanta nothing. This is SRN Sports. Two interleague games yesterday. Pittsburgh beat Tampa Bay 4-0, Dodgers 6, and the Angels 2. NBA news, two of the best players in the Western Conference are about to become unrestricted free agents. A person with knowledge of the situation tells the AP that Kevin Durant has declined to opt in for the second year of his contract with Golden State. Durant has said he plans to re-sign with the team that he led to a title earlier this month, his first as a pro. He would now have to reach a new deal after free agency begins on Saturday. Elsewhere, Utah Jazz small forward Gordon Hayward has declined the player option final season on his contract and will test the free agent market. The Jazz have made it clear that re-signing him is a big deal, but the Celtics and the Heat say they want to do it as well. NHL news, the New York Rangers have agreed to terms on a new deal with defenseman Brendan Smith 2 days before he would have become an unrestricted free agent and a popular one at that. This is SRN Sports.
Hello, Kubo. What have you got planned for today?
Come on, this way.
Adventure can be found anywhere, but the best place to start is in the forest.
It's the most powerful magic there is.
Head outside to discover incredible animals.
Wow.
And beautiful plants that come together to create an unforgettable adventure. So grab your loved ones and explore a world of possibilities. Visit discovertheforest.org to find the closest forest or park to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Forest Service.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk. And lines are open at 541-299-0498. 541-299-0498. You can also reach the show at email at feedback@943thebridge.com and put Rogue Talk on the subject line, and those will come right to me. And of course, the website is 943thebridge.com. Visit the website and you can download past episodes. There's even a shop store on there. You can get some 94.3 The Bridge swag, so check that out. So I had one announcement I wanted to get to before we start talking about the minimum wage, and that was that for those of us living here in Jackson or Josephine counties, the Department of Forestry has raised the fire level, the fire danger level to high. And so you'll want to check what all the restrictions are, you know, related to that. Not surprising with the 4th of July. This is the sort of the 4th of July weekend. Of course, the 4th not coming up till, you know, middle of the week next week. But, you know, this weekend and next will be when people will be celebrating, I'm sure. And so they wanted to get those fire restrictions raised up, I think, ahead of the 4th of July celebrations. So you can check all the restrictions on that. So another thing happening, starting tomorrow will mark the second step in the state's six-year minimum wage law. And in our area, that means it'll jump up from $9.75 an hour up to $10.25 an hour, a 50-cent increase. And so for me, especially, you know, this started a little ahead of when Rogue Talk first went on the air, was when this law first went into place. So when I heard the announcement about the next increase coming starting tomorrow, July 1st, You know, it brings up some questions, and I wanted to look at some of those questions. And some of what I've got here, of course, is going to be my opinion. But some of this is, I did quite a bit of research on this, trying to kind of make heads or tails of the minimum wage and what it means for different communities and that sort of thing. And there's been all kinds of studies, and there's even been studies on other studies. So it's definitely something that's been researched a lot, but a lot of the conclusions aren't really conclusions. They're sort of still guesses. And until it all plays out, we won't know the exact results. But some of the questions I was thinking about, one of them, kind of a two-part question, was, is the minimum wage itself, is that a good idea to have a minimum wage? And if so, should it represent a so-called living wage? And we'll get into what that means a little bit. So first of all, when it comes to wages, and just setting aside the minimum wage for a second, wages are best determined by the free market, by market, you know, the influences of the market, the market conditions. And the reason for that is, you know, even in a geographical area like, you know, the state of Oregon, there's so many different socioeconomic pockets here and there, and you can't really have a one size fits all, you know, approach to that. And it's, in my opinion, it's best to let the free market take care of that. And, you know, along those lines, the Oregon law, the way it is written, is a perfect example of this. They want this, you know, increase in the minimum wage because that's the popular progressive thing to do. And you know, when it comes to state government here in Oregon, they tend to be very progressive. And that's not to say whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. We can determine those things for ourselves. But that's the direction they want to go. But the way this law was written actually gives a lot of credence to letting market conditions determine wages and not, you know, so much the government determining those. But we'll get back to that in just a bit, and we'll dig into that a little deeper. So let's kind of dive into the second part of that question. Should this be a living wage, and what does that mean? Well, I would say no, and I would say no for a couple of reasons, and here's why. First of all, my opinion of minimum wage jobs are that those are entry-level jobs, and it's a place where low-skill workers, often teenagers, but not always, but lower-skilled workers can learn new skills, can earn some money while they're working, but they're learning new skills and they're trying to maybe work their way up in a company, or they're going to take the new skills that they learned and go out and find a better job. But that's my opinion of what a minimum wage job is supposed to be. I don't think it should be looked at as something someone has to live on. Now, the source of the minimum wage, where it all started, it actually was, in a certain way, was intended to be a living wage. FDR put in the minimum wage, and he set that wage at what he thought was, I don't think he used the term a living wage. That's what we've kind of adopted more recently, but that's, you know, that's ultimately what he was wanting. And he set it at 25 cents an hour. And we're going to get into what that looks like in a bit. So it's sort of there's sort of two sides to this. It was intended to be a living wage, but, and again, we're gonna go into that a little deeper in just a second here. But part of the reason that I think that we can no longer really consider it as a living wage is because the economic growth in the country has actually outpaced the minimum wage, and it um, so what FDR would have called a living wage would be much, much lower at this point than what the minimum wage actually is, even without trying to raise it to, you know, this, you know, $15 an hour, you know, goal, I guess you can call it. We'll get back to FDR a little bit, but I wanted to give you kind of both sides of the living wage argument there. And so lost my place here in my notes. I had to take a lot of notes. I told you there's a lot of information on this. So one of the things that I was reading an article that was fairly well written. It was in the New York Times, and there were several articles on both sides of the argument for the $15 minimum wage or just a minimum wage in general. And one of the articles that was really meant to support the minimum wage, they were quoting a restaurateur in Seattle. And of course, Seattle put in their own minimum wage, and it's a tiered minimum wage, and they're working their way up to $15 an hour. And one of the points she was making, because she supported this law, was that they have, in her chain of restaurants in the Seattle area, they have over 300 employees in 14 different restaurants. And she said she had not reduced hiring because of employee costs. However, what she did say was that they have increased menu prices and they have instituted a 20% service fee. So it's easy to say, well, you know, we're still hiring the same amount of people. We're still employing the same amount of people. But if you're raising prices, that's the, you know, it's the other side of the same coin, so to speak. It's your costs are still going up. You're just choosing to pass those on to your customer instead of cutting employees. Well, and unfortunately, from some of the news reports that we've been reading related to the Seattle minimum wage, some of the restaurants are not surviving. They're either cutting or having to close down. In fact, there has been some restaurants that have closed down. Now, obviously, if this wage is affecting them in that way, you know, part of it is they may not be run well, or they may, you know, they may have been not paying their employees enough to begin with, and so forcing them into a higher wage, you know, they just weren't prepared for. So you can't put it all on the minimum wage, of course. However, the economy in Seattle has been steadily increasing and getting better. So, like, even in the case of this restaurateur, she's admitting they've had to raise menu prices and add a service fee. And she didn't say she's still hiring more employees, which means they're not growing. So in a booming economy, so to speak, and that's how it was described in this article. I don't know if I would go along with that, but I don't live in Seattle, so I'll go with what the article says. In this booming economy, they should be growing. That's what happens with business in a booming economy. They grow. And so I'm just not seeing, you know, all these different studies and all the things that they've been looking at to support this. I just don't think that it really, it's not measuring up. There, of course, there's going to be some benefits to it for some. And again, a lot of this is speculatory, because until they get to that $15 mark, we don't know what all the results will be. And on top of that, what are they going to do after they hit that? You know, are they going to pass another law and bump it up, keep bumping it up? So back to the living wage argument just for a second. Another reason I don't think that the minimum wage should be a living wage, and I mentioned FDR once again, the 25 cents an hour was what was set as this so-called living wage when FDR instituted the minimum wage. Well, if you just use general inflation to stick with that minimum wage of 25 cents an hour, that would be $4.20 an hour today. And it might be a hair higher than that. This is that some of this information was about a year old. But nonetheless, at $4.20 an hour, that's about $8,400 a year. Now, what I will say about that is $8,400 a year still puts you in the top 20% of global incomes. So incomes across the world, $8,400 a year still puts you in the top 20%. But let's face it, the American economy has so outperformed most of the world, including other industrialized nations, that we've come to expect a little more than that. And I don't expect minimum wage workers to be paid $4.20 an hour. I'm not against necessarily some sort of a minimum wage as a protector of employees. But you can see that if we just go by just that, that general, inflationary increase, $4.20, doesn't sound like a living wage to me at all. So that's another reason I just reject the idea that the minimum wage is supposed to be a living wage. And I don't think you should be trying to live on minimum wage. I think in certain parts of the country you could. Other parts of the country, not so much, but I don't think that's the point at all. I don't think you should be trying to live on it. So going back to kind of the broader question about, is the minimum wage a good idea? And again, as I mentioned, I'm not really in favor of abolishing the minimum wage, but let's kind of look back at the assertion I made about the Oregon law, that the Oregon law actually proves that market conditions should set wages and not the minimum wage. The Oregon law separates the state into three economic regions and increases wages to a lesser extent in the poorer, more rural regions, and more aggressively raises the minimum wage in the richer, more densely populated regions. Well, why do they do that? Why not equal wages for everyone? I mean, wouldn't that be fair? I mean, progressivism is all about fairness, and we know Oregon is a very progressive state when it comes to their government. And we've mentioned it on the show before. They sort of contradict themselves on occasion. They go for these progressive goals, but then some of the progressive goals are not really realistic, and so that hits them in the face. And so when they wrote this bill, the legislators realized that the cost of living, such as housing, is drastically different from area to area. And this is what I call, again, market conditions. You can't change the market conditions. The government can, manipulate wages with laws. They can manipulate taxes with laws, but they can't manipulate market conditions. Now, they can change them based on their draconian, if they get too draconian with their laws and their taxes, obviously they can be detrimental toward the market. But they really, because the government doesn't create anything, it doesn't have an income of its own, it has to take from the market to have money to spend. Money spent by the government cannot stimulate long-term the market. You can have some short-term effects on occasion, but long-term, you're taking money out of the same market that you're trying to stimulate, so it in the long-term, that just really doesn't work. And the legislature realized that, and that's why they made the three different economic regions. And so where ours is only going up 50 cents in our area, I think this second round is going up $1 or $1.25 up in the Portland metro area. So right there, they recognize the market conditions are really what drives, what drives wages. And so they made that adjustment. So now, and you can even see in this area, even though rents here have gotten higher, I've been here a little over 15 years, and the rents in the southern Oregon area have gotten drastically higher, but they still don't come anywhere close to what rents are in the Portland area. So, you know, this argument about, well, I need $15 an hour to pay the rent. Well, pay the rent where? You know, and again, Oregon realized that, and that's why they made this three region approach. The other another thing that they did with this law that really to me proves that the market conditions are what really should be driving wages, and that would be that they stepped it over 6 years. Well, why would we do that? Why not just set it at $15 an hour, or in the case of Oregon, it's actually $14.75, I think, is the ceiling of the current law, and that's only in the Portland metro area. But why not just immediately set it $14.75 an hour? Well, again, the legislature realized that market conditions just wouldn't allow for that. Business profits are based on the market conditions, and different businesses can have vastly different profit margins. Where maybe a business-to-business wholesaler might operate with a profit margin of, let's say, 30%, the average in the restaurant industry has a profit margin of 4%. So there's a big discrepancy there in how much, you know, that margin is really where the room that you have to adjust to things. And so restaurants are things are really tight for restaurants. If something changes too drastically, you know, it would have a huge, you know, just a crushing effect on them. And again, we've already seen that even with the gradual increases in the minimum wage in Seattle, we've seen some restaurants close. Now, again, I would contend that they probably were not probably the best run restaurants. But again, when your profit margin is only in the neighborhood of 4%, you don't have a lot of room to fool around with. And so again, the way this law was written, they were basically admitting that market conditions are really what drives everything. And that they, I mean, it's almost an admission without not passing the law that this is probably a bad idea, but we're going to phase it in anyhow because, well, we want to do what we want to do. So the Oregon law I mentioned has the ceiling of $14.75, and that will be in place by 2022 at the end of their 6 years. And my next question would be, why not 15? Why not 20? Why not $50 an hour? What is so magic about, in this case, $14.75, or what we're hearing nationally? What is so magic about $15 an hour? Well, of course, we've already mentioned that just even within the state of Oregon, there's so many different regions that are, you know, economically are so much, there's so much diversity there. I mean, there's rural areas where, you know, they couldn't keep a business open paying people $15 an hour, or at least not give the kind of service that, you know, that they want to. So, you know, the $15 an hour is a little bit of a artificial goal, and it doesn't have anything to do with market conditions. The market economy is the only sustainable way to determine wages. And I feel like I keep saying that over and over, and I probably am in, you know, three or five different ways. But that's kind of what I'm getting at with this. And again, I'm not saying I'm against the minimum wage. I think it has its purpose, but its purpose, again, isn't to be a living wage. So So kind of to sum that up a little bit, and then I might touch on a few other pieces of this. The increasing of the minimum wage to $15 an hour, as they're wanting to do all over the country, I realize it's a bit of the progressive nirvana to hit that $15 mark. And, you know, for some time, even the state of Oregon, in writing its law, had to recognize that ultimately, again, market conditions will always be the dominant driver of the economy. And that includes, and especially when it comes to wages. So, you know, again, I'm not against a minimum wage. I think it goes in as a good protection for workers. But FDR's idea of it being a living wage, at the very best, would be a subjective argument for that, for a living wage. But really, at the worst, as we mentioned, FDR's model would drastically increase the wage gap. Another progressive nirvana to close the wage gap. The problem is, well, one, it's sort of a false goal to want to close the wage gap, because there's more than one way you can close the wage gap. You know, in the 80s, the middle class shrank. And of course, today they'll try and point at that and say, see, look, Reaganomics was terrible and the middle class contracted. And, well, that's really a mischaracterization of what happened. The middle class got slower because more people moved up, not because people got poorer. And of course, you couldn't turn on a TV in the 80s without the nightly news, you know, going to every homeless shelter in the country and looking for all of these sob stories, because they were so against, you know, the Reagan tax cuts. And that's not, you know, to say Reagan had all the answers. Reagan spent a lot of money. He did not have control of all of Congress. In fact, he butted heads quite a bit with Tip O'Neill, the Speaker of the House. And so he was still a pretty big spender. But when you look at his tax cuts and you look at the actual numbers, not what you do with the numbers and not all the conflation of the numbers, but you look at the actual numbers, the result of those tax cuts were a doubling of the money brought in by the government in tax receipts. Now, again, you can point to the fact that he spent a lot of money, so the deficit continued to grow as it did under all presidents, and that includes Clinton. The Clinton surplus is a fallacy. I'm not going to get into that today, but all the presidents increased the deficit in the modern era. Reagan was not exempt from that by any means. But again, it gets back to that. You know, the policies of the government, really, the more onerous they get, the more negative effect they can have on the economy, on wages, on all of that, and the more they can let things go. That doesn't mean, you know, the wild, wild west, this idea of an unfettered free market. There's literally millions of pages of regulations that have been passed for years and years and years, and they continue to be passed. There's, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of pages of regulations are passed every year. So the idea of an unfettered free market is kind of a ridiculous notion anyhow. But again, this approach to trying to make the minimum wage, this living wage, it just doesn't measure up. And that, you know, that idea of closing the income gap is really ridiculous, because we want incomes to be at every level, and an income gap, it makes it sound like there's nobody in the middle. There's only low wage employees and there's only high wage employees and there's nobody in the middle. Well, we know that that's not true. And part of the reason we actually want a wage gap is we want those minimum wage employees to be learning the skills they need to better themselves so that they can move up the chain, they can move up the ladder. And what happens is, take an inner city community, let's say Detroit or maybe Chicago, where, you know, the unemployment rate for the inner city teens is super high. For black teenagers in some communities, it's as high as 50%. Across the nation, it's around 25%. And that's not to say every teenager has to have a job, but look at the dropout rates in those same communities. If you raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour from, you know, I think what's the national minimum wage, around $7.50. Let's say it was even $8. You raise the minimum wage from $8 an hour to $15 an hour in inner city Chicago, you're going to have a lot of kids dropping out of school. they weren't planning on going to college to begin with, the kids that I'm talking about, and they're going to drop out of school. They're, you know, 15, 16 years old. They're going to go, you know, why am I going to hang around here anymore? I just got a raise. I just doubled my income overnight because they raised the minimum wage to $15 an hour. So you potentially could actually increase the dropout rate, especially in these inner city communities. But then take the other side of the coin, go to these tiny rural communities, and you've got a small restaurant in a tiny little town like Rogue River, except maybe let's say even smaller, and there's only three restaurants in town or two in town, and now you've got to double the wages of your employees. Now, granted, they're doing these in steps, so we're talking over the course of 5 years, 6 years, whatever they happen to be. Your service is gonna go downhill. It's not gonna be good because you're gonna have less employees because you can only charge so much. Your customers, if you raise prices too much, they're not gonna be coming in. They're gonna say, you know, I like the restaurant, but I can go to the local supermarket. I can get the food much cheaper. I like to eat out, but I just can't afford it. And it's a vicious cycle for those. So you've got the two extremes of the spectrum, and by all accounts, you're not helping at either one of those extremes. Now you may end up helping people in between there somewhere, in places where they are more able to sustain the increases in their income of their workers. But really, it's just the people that you're really trying to help. They say these things are for the poor. Well, these, you know, you've got the dirt poor in the South and the Midwest in these ultra rural communities, and you got the dirt poor in the inner cities in the projects. And clearly something like this is hurting those people, the people that they keep telling us it's trying to help. And I, again, and these are my opinions, and but I did do a lot of research on this, and there's a lot more to do. It's quite the hot topic around the country, and there's this article after article. But again, it doesn't mean that I say, you know, we should get rid of the minimum wage. There's a lot of people that would promote that to you, and that may be okay. I don't know. I'm okay with it as kind of a safety net to make sure we're not letting companies take advantage of their employees. I just don't. I think really what the kind of the crux of my argument today is the idea of a living wage, and I just reject that. And so I'd love to hear what you think. There is a little time left in the show. I'm going to have to take a break here before the computer kicks me off. But you can call in at 541-299-0498. I'm going to take a break right in here, and we'll be back with the end of the show. Don't go away.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. A law enforcement official says the gunman who opened fire at a New York City hospital was a doctor who used to work there. The official says Dr. Henry Bello walked into Bronx Lebanon Hospital this afternoon with a rifle concealed in his lab coat and then opened fire. He killed at least one person and injured six others, then apparently killed himself. The White House says it remains fully committed to pushing through a health care plan in the Senate, but is looking at every possible option to repeal and replace the Obamacare law. President Donald Trump tweeted earlier today that if Republican senators are unable to pass the Senate bill, they should, quoting here, immediately repeal and then replace at a later date. Morning Joe hosts say the White House told them a National Enquirer investigation wouldn't go away if they apologized to President Donald Trump for their coverage of him. Trump said Joe Scarborough asked him to intercede with the Enquirer. Scarborough denies that.
You're on 94.3 The Bridge. Radio that's worth listening to.
Oh, I wish there was a way to find out what events are going on in Rogue River.
There is.
There is?
Yeah, the website for 94.3 The Bridge.
They have Rogue River events on their website?
Yeah, for Gold Hill, Weimar, and Grants Pass, too. You can even submit your own event for everyone in town to see. And if it's on the website, they automatically talk about it on the radio, too.
That's awesome. What's the address to this site?
It's 943thebridge.com.
N-I-N.
No. Just type the numbers. 943thebridge.com.
Oh, 943thebridge.com. Hey, look, they have the latest local news on there, too.
They have everything on there. 943thebridge.com.
My savings are gone.
Okay, where were they last?
Here, right before I spent them on that vacation to Aruba.
Weird. Not weird. Not saving now means no money later. For free ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
With the SRN News Business Brief, I'm Dennis Crowley. A report from the government says Congress must increase the government's borrowing limit by early to mid-October or face a first-ever default on U.S. obligations. The Congressional Budget Office also predicts the federal budget deficit will spike to $693 billion this year. This is $134 billion more than it predicted in January, mostly because of slipping tax revenue projections. Walgreens has ended its takeover pursuit of rival Rite Aid following resistance from U.S. regulators. Instead, Walgreens will buy nearly 2,200 stores from Rite Aid, along with three distribution centers and related inventory for more than $5 billion in cash. And on Wall Street, the Dow dipped almost 166 points. With business, I'm done.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk. And we've been talking about the minimum wage today. And once again, if you have any thoughts on that and you didn't call in today, you can always reach me at feedback@943thebridge.com. That is our email. And if you put Rogue Talk on the subject line, those will go right to me. And if you have any things, any stories or that you'd like me to talk about here on Rogue Talk, you have anyone you think would be a good interview, or maybe you'd like to get on the show, I'd love to hear from you. And there was a couple of points, or at least one more point I wanted to make on the minimum wage that I missed before. And that is that even though 5% of the workforce earns minimum wage, or approximately, it can vary, but it's right around that number of 5%. Many business models rely heavily on minimum wage workers. And so while I don't think anyone should be trying to make a living on minimum wage, not that you can't, because in certain instances you can, you should be using that minimum wage job, again, as a way to improve yourself and to get a better job and to work your way up. But those businesses that rely heavily on minimum wage workers, like restaurants we mentioned, some manufacturing, you know, in the country relies on minimum wage labor, especially the clothing industry. The minimum wage in Los Angeles is really going to, you know, be a blow to the clothing manufacturing industry. It's already a shrinking industry. And as minimum wages go up in California, it's really probably going to nearly eliminate clothing manufacturers in at least in Los Angeles and probably in other places in the country. And again, not that that's always necessarily the worst thing. There's a lot of jobs we shouldn't be doing here because we can outsource those jobs a lot cheaper and we can use our labor to do more meaningful things or more productive things that grow our economy even more. But just something to think about. And there's no, you know, right answer or no single answer. Of course, minimum wage probably needs to be adjusted, you know, annually for the cost of living. It should outpace welfare. So, you know, those are things that we need to look at. But I don't think it needs to be a living wage. But again, that's up for everyone else to decide. Not just me. But I want to thank you a ton for listening today. And so, as I leave you with every Friday, be good to one another because Rogue Talk is over.
You've been listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
Listen to Rogue Talk with Jeff Smith, Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Rogue River's Hometown Voice.
94.3 The Bridge.
Or on demand at 943thebridge.com.